I've noticed, especially during the last week, as I've walked around the neighborhood, as I've driven around town, these mysterious cobwebs hanging across doorways, suspended from trees, and these large orange squashes with frightening faces carved in them. And I was reminded, it's almost Halloween. 1 week away. When I think of Halloween, some people may get mad at me for saying this, but when I think of Halloween, the first thing I think of is
candy.
Right? I'm a Snickers guy, you should know that. The second thing I think of is come on, scary costumes. Right? You know, the scariest costumes being sold this season are costumes of politicians. I'm not kidding you. It's true. I saw a special on TV, which reminds me that we are living in scary times for many, right? We know that. We are blessed to be living in this part of the country, boy, but I just got back from New York State. You travel a little bit, you realize how depressed things are around the nation. Unemployment is high, salaries are low, our mortgages are underwater, and the chill I felt in the air 2 nights ago especially reminds me of the snow we had last winter. Right? Some people are like anticipating that, a little scared. It's for this reason in our nation, right, that many, many people get consumed with fear. Actually, the old German word for worry actually means a word to choke. That's what it means. It consumes us, worry. And it's into this environment I want us to read our scripture for this morning, taken from Mark's Gospel. If you open up to Mark's Gospel, grab a Bible. You need to follow this. Mark's Gospel, chapter 4. Beginning at verse 35, Gospel of Mark, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, Mark's Gospel, chapter 4, beginning at verse 35, says this: "That day when evening came, he, Jesus, said to his disciples, 'Let us go over to the other side,' and leaving the crowd behind, they took him along just as he was in the boat. There were also other boats with him, and a furious squall came up, and the waves broke over the boat so that it was nearly swamped. Jesus was in the stern," I love this, "sleeping on a cushion," right, in the back of the boat, sound asleep. "The disciples woke him and said to him, 'Teacher, don't you care if we drowned?' And he got up and rebuked the wind and the waves, 'Quiet, be still.' Then the wind died down and it was completely calm. And he said to his disciples, 'Why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith?' They were terrified and asked each other, 'Who is this that even the wind and the waves obey him?'" Now, I have to tell you, Barbara's not here, I won't get into the whole story, but on our honeymoon this happened to us. One of the most frightening things that I ever experienced was being caught in a storm at sea. Some of you know the story, but if you ask me, I'll tell you after church. But it's a frightening thing to be out in the middle of an ocean and caught in a storm at sea. But as frightening as that experience was for me, not for Barbara, well, it was frightening for Barbara too, because it was like really life-threatening. But as frightening as that experience was for me and Barbara, it was nothing compared to the fears that ancient sailors had that they experienced as they crossed the oceans for the first time. Can you imagine? How many of you have seen the Pirates of the Caribbean movies? Right? In one of those movies, there's this old grizzly pirate. I think he's like the rebel pirate on the other ship. He looks at them, and they're looking at where they want to go, and they're looking at a map, and they say, "There be monsters." Right? There's a reason for that. In the British Museum in London, there's this old mariner's chart. As far as they know, it was first drawn in the year 1525. People were just starting to cross the seas, and it outlined the shores of North America and the islands that were here, you know, the Dominican Republic, all those islands. And it also outlined some of the areas on that map, places where they had never been, places that were not explored. And it's here that the cartographer, the map maker, makes some interesting notations about those areas that were still unexplored. Things like, "Here be giants, and here be fiery scorpions, here be dragons, and then my favorite, Pirates of the Caribbean, here be monsters." Now, before we begin to make fun of them, which I kind of was doing a little bit this morning, let me ask you, what are you afraid of? What are you most afraid of? If you were to ask Barb what I'm afraid of, she would say without a doubt, bees. I am not a great bee lover. She loves to tell this story. She embellishes a little bit, I have to tell you. She loves to tell this story that when she was 8 months pregnant, that we decided to go to a bed and breakfast to get away. And we go to this bed and breakfast, and we go into the bed and breakfast, and it's getting dark. The owner of the place is already going to sleep, and we're going to bed, and this bee starts to fly around the room. And so what do you think I do? I get as far under the covers as I could, and I make Barbara, 8 months pregnant, climb up on a chair. It's true. Figured if it sped the baby coming out, that wouldn't be a bad thing. Climb up there to kill this bee. Everyone experiences fear, different kind of fears at one time or another in their lives. Here's a list of some of the fears I found on the internet this week. Some of the fears. Palatophobia, which is fear of baldness and bald people. Aerophobia. Anyone want to guess? No. Fear of drafts. Porphyrophobia, fear of the color purple. I'll give you a chance to guess. Cheetophobia.
Cheetahs.
No, fear of hairy people, like cheetah. Fear of hairy people. Levophobia, which is fear of objects on the left side of the body. Dextrophobia, which is fear of objects on the right side of the body. Caliprophobia, fear of obscure meanings. It's like if you're afraid of this sermon right now. Thalassophobia, fear of being seated. See if anybody gets this right. Stabisbasiophobia. Stabisbasiophobia, fear of standing up and walking. And then somebody's got to get one of these right. Has anybody gotten any right? Okay. You're going to get this. How about phobophobia? Fear of fear. Somebody said it right. So if you are afraid of something, you are not alone. It's a common thing. So it makes Jesus' question to the disciples in the story we just read even more unusual. He looks at these veterans of the sea and says, "Why are you so afraid?" I want to submit to you this morning, they had reason to be afraid. These guys were professional seamen. They knew what was happening. Actually, when Barb and I got caught in this storm at sea, I had never been on the open ocean before, and it looked like we were going to die. And I thought to myself, this is normal. It looks really bad. And I looked at Barbara, who had grown up in Atlantic City, who her Sunday school classes would go out in the ocean for Sunday school in the summertime occasionally, right? Her Sunday school teacher would take them out on his sailboat. And I looked at Barbara, who grew up on the ocean, and said, "Barbara, this isn't as bad as it looks." And Barbara says, "It's as bad as it looks." Right? When these guys got scared in a storm, you could pretty well be assured they had reason to be scared. They knew what was going on. Now, sometimes fear is a good thing. Do you know that? Fear is a good thing. Like, honey, remember when you crossed the street to look both ways? Why, Daddy? Because if that big car comes hurtling down the street and doesn't see you and you get hit, it's going to hurt. It's a fear motivation. So, same goes for sticking a pin in an electric socket, right? You go right past a pier and you're pulling them away from that when they're little kids. Fear is a God-given response to the dangers of life that can cause us harm. It protects us. And not only is fear practical, God commands us to fear at least one thing. Russell, what is it? Him. Him. Proverbs 1:7 says, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge." Proverbs 10:27 says, "The fear of the Lord will add length to your life." And just so you don't think it's just an Old Testament thing, 1 Peter 2:7 says, "Show proper respect to everyone, love the brotherhood of believers, and fear God." That's New Testament. Now, we like to say, and I've done this as a preacher, that it means respect. And in some cases, it does, but I have news for you. In some cases, it doesn't. Sometimes it just means flat-out scary fear. And it's even used that way in the New Testament. It's why everyone who comes into the presence of God, think about it. You read the stories in the New Testament. Their first response when they come into the presence of God is to do what? Is to hit the deck. They fall down. And it's more than just a respect thing. There's this reverence and awe that, frankly, we need to discover more of in our own lives and in our churches. What it means to fear God. So fear is sometimes a good thing if the situation warrants it. So then why does Jesus rebuke his disciples for being afraid? He does. The wind was howling. Think about this. The waves were swamping the boat, coming into the boat. What was so bad about the disciples being afraid that it earns these strong words from Jesus? I believe the answer is found in one little word that's in this text. The word is so. Jesus says to the disciples, "Why are you so afraid?" The Greek word is huto. It means in this way or in this manner. So it wasn't the fear that Jesus was rebuking, I believe, but I believe what he was rebuking was the way in which they were being afraid, the extent of it. They were panicking at this point, right? The first thing was they were panicking. The second thing is they became angry at him. Jesus, wake up! What are you doing sleeping back there on that cushion right now? Don't you care if we drown? Jesus, don't you even care? Now, some people think they were mad because they expected Jesus to calm the storm. I don't think that was it at all. They weren't looking for a storm calming at this point because it's only after the storm that it finally dawns on them and they ask this question, who is this that even the wind and the waves obey him? They didn't know that before. They're just figuring it out. They're still figuring out this whole Jesus thing. They didn't have it all down yet. And one of the ways they learn about who he was is through this event. No, I believe they were mad because Jesus was sleeping on this cushion in the back of the boat. They were mad, think about this, because Jesus wasn't as worried about the situation as they were. That's why they're upset. What, don't you care, Jesus? Now, one of the most difficult things about helping people in the middle of a life crisis or in the middle of a storm, as a pastor, I have an opportunity to do that frequently, but you as just a person in life, you're going to have opportunity to help people who are in the middle of crisis. But one of the most difficult things about helping people in those situations is that frequently the very people that you are trying to help and give encouragement to end up getting angry at you. So why were the disciples so angry? Back to that question. Jesus said, "Do you still have no faith?" Even though this was still very early in Jesus' ministry, these men had seen Jesus' power. They had seen him heal the sick. They had seen him cast demons out of people. And as a matter of fact, Jesus had already sent them out by this point to do some of the same things. So if the disciples had seen Jesus do all that, why didn't they ask Jesus to help them in the middle of this storm before it got so bad? And then back to the question, why were they angry? Why were they angry? I believe this storm was no accident. Our text, it was Jesus. It's interesting, this story starts, it was Jesus who made them get into the boat to go over to the other side. It was Jesus. I believe Jesus wanted to teach these guys what it meant to look to him when the real storms would come. This was just the beginning of their storms. I believe Jesus wanted to teach them what it meant to look to him when they would stand before governors and kings for his name, when they would face challenges to their faith, and yes, even be called upon to give their own lives for his name. He was preparing them. C.S. Lewis once wrote this. He said, "You never know how much you really believe anything until the truth or falsehood becomes a matter of life and death." It's easy to believe a rope to be strong as long as you're only using it to tie up a package. But suppose you had to use that same rope to hang from a mountain's edge. It's then that you would first discover just how much you really trusted the rope. As we go through life, all of us are going to go through storms. Storms are going to come. We have a choice. We can panic, just like the disciples did. We can choose to get angry at God, at people, at our spouse, at our children, or at our parents. Or we can allow God to use our struggles, even our losses, to educate us, to change us, to challenge us, to grow in faith, to test how much we really believe in the strength of the rope. Because I have to tell you, it's only in the midst of a storm that we really learn how much we trust in Jesus. Right? The book of Proverbs says, if you faint in the day of adversity, your strength is small. It's one of the verses I hate when I want to faint, but it's there. When those disciples were out there on that sea, the storm they faced was real. It was frightening. It was a threat to their lives and to their futures and to their livelihood. And there wasn't a thing that they can do about it. When you're out in the middle of a storm at sea, you realize how much bigger that the storm is and how much bigger that sea is than you. They were totally powerless. We don't like to feel that way. I believe that's one of the reasons they were so angry. Now, some of you have been in similar circumstances. I know that I have. At times, I have been frustrated by those situations when I want God to do something and he's not responding like I want him to respond. At times, I've even been angry. So if we're honest, we can sympathize with those guys on the boat, the disciples. We can sympathize with what they were going through. But here's an even greater truth, and we're going to be closing with this morning. Jesus was right there with them. He was with them. They felt alone, but they weren't alone. For in this storm, prior to any storm that they had been through in their life, in this storm, they had Jesus. I heard someone tell a story a while ago about a speaker who was explaining to the people he was speaking to what it meant to trust Jesus in every trial. And at the end of that message, he kept repeating this phrase over and over. Trusting Jesus in your trials means that in every circumstance, you can keep on saying, for this, I have Jesus. For this, I have Jesus. As he was wrapping up that message, there was a woman in the crowd, and she stood up and she said something. She stood up and she said, I have something to share. I just received a message. It said, your mother is ill. She's probably going to die. You need to fly home immediately. And the lady said, when I got that message, I knew that what you had just said was for me. My heart looked up and said, for this, I have Jesus. She said, I'm afraid to fly. I hate to fly. I never fly. But for this, I have Jesus. And she said, I'm close to my mother. I love her more than life itself. But even for this, I have Jesus. Now, at the start of my message this morning, I told you a story about that ancient map, right? That map of the New World that's on display in the British Museum in London. And if you go there, you'd see this. Eventually, the map was purchased by another British explorer. Further on down the line, his name was Sir John Franklin. And he loved this map because it was one of the first maps ever made like this. And he had it in his presence all the time. But the longer he had it, the more those inscriptions on the unknown parts of that map bothered him. Phrases like, here be giants, Here be fiery serpents. Here be dragons. Here be the monsters. And he just couldn't take having it in his presence anymore. So he drew a line through all those things and wrote three words. Here is God. Fear is a powerful emotion. If it's left unchecked, it will shape your life. It will shape your destiny. But when Jesus enters your boat, instead of panic, instead of anger, we can scratch off the old fear and replace it with this statement. Here is God. It works. It works. When I was caught in the storm at sea with Barb on our honeymoon, I was scared, but I started to think, at least I made it to my wedding day. And I thought to myself, here is God, right? And I did start to think of all the deep, deep love of Jesus, although the sea was a little bit too rough to actually sing it. But facing death, right, I knew that there was God on the other side. Second year I was married, Barbara got deathly ill. She was so sick, I remember they put us in the hospital, and I didn't have to gown up to see her, I had to wear a moon suit. Turns out she had Crohn's disease. Some of you know what that is, but she had every possible symptoms that you could possibly have with Crohn's. Especially at that time, people didn't know how to diagnose the problem. And I remember both of us, right, being in there, not knowing before they diagnosed what the problem was, going in with the moon suit and having a peace that passed understanding. Right? People were praying for us. I felt like angel wings underneath me. But we knew. We made it to our wedding day. But we knew that our lives were in God's hands, that God was there, even in the middle of the struggle. So I want you to think for a minute of your fear, the biggest fear you have in your life right now. Think of it. Just crystallize it in your mind. Really, think of it. I want you to say these words after me as you think of that fear. For this, I have Jesus. For this, I have Jesus. Now, I want somebody to look at me when I say this too, because I need this, because I just thought of a fear. I want you to look at the person on your right and say, for this, on your right, somebody look at me. I need somebody to look at me. Janae, look at me. For this, you have Jesus. Now, you have to do it again, because I was looking at the person who said it to me, so whatever direction you're looking, look the other way. For this, you have Jesus. Do it to your left. For this, you have Jesus. Somebody do it to me now. I need it again. For this, you have Jesus. Amen. Russell, Elizabeth.